So we're holding on page Ayn Dalad in Nazir, about three lines from the bottom, the end of towards the end of Oys Gimel. We started learning yesterday in the last time about Lot and his daughters. The Gemara had brought the pasuk Yisharim Darchei Hashem, the ways of Hashem are straight. The tzaddikim Yerchovam, tzaddikim walk in them. Ufoshim Yikash Levam, and then people who do deliberate averus stumble in them. So we said after the Gemara had gone through a couple of possibilities, it says that this is an illustration of that would be Lot and his two daughters. So we know they did what they did because they thought the whole world had been destroyed, and they're the only women left, and he's the only man left to have children and rebuild the world. So they were doing L'shem Mitzvah, whereas Lot was doing L'shem Aveira, and therefore they can be called the Tzaddikim Yehovam, where meanwhile Lot is being called the Poshim Yikash Levon. So then we said the Gemara had asked maybe he was doing a L'shem Mitzvah as well, and we said that no, for a long time already he had tendencies towards Znus. The whole reason why he moved to Sodom in the first place is because of the Znus that was rampant over there. We brought a pasuk that pointed that out. So now the Gemara asks, "Von menas onis." Okay, but after all, they got him drunk. He's an onus. In fact, in halacha, you have a person who is drunk to the extent that Lot was, and he doesn't know what's going on, is an onus. So therefore, he taka had no, he couldn't possibly have known what's going on. So how can we call him a rosha? How can we call him ofoshim yikosh luvon? I'm taking this down because I'm going to need it as we go through. So how are we calling him Foshim Yikosh Luvon? The answer is the answer is Tonim Mishum Rabbi Yosi ben Rav Choni. The answer is based on what Rabbi Yosi ben Rav Choni says. Lomon nakud avav shab kuma shabachira. When you have the Pesukim over there that describe how first the elder daughter and then the younger daughter will lay with him. And so with the elder daughter, the expression in the part by both of them, the expression is v'layada b'shichva v'kuma. He didn't know when she lay down and when she got up. But by the elder daughter, it uses it, when you have the word uvakuma, and in her getting up, you have a dot in the Sefer Torah over the vav in the middle of the word uvakuma. Now, a dot on a word in Torah always teaches us to darshin something about that pasuk. So that tells us, the Tosfos explains, in other words, basically the dot makes as if the word wasn't there. Implying, Loimar, it tells us, Shebashichva lo yoda, pobakuma yoda. He didn't know when she went to sleep with him because, yeah, he was dead drunk. But he knew when she got up that morning. And nevertheless, as Rashi points out on the pasuk, nevertheless, though, that didn't prevent him from drinking again the following night. So therefore, now we can't, so fine, with the elder daughter, we can consider him an onus in the sense that he didn't know what was going to happen. But now that he knew that she woke up next to him the following morning, he should have realized what's going on, that his drinking that made it possible for this to happen, and he shouldn't have drunk the following night. And when he did, then we can call him a pesheya for that. A large part of this Gemara that we're talking about over here, this whole discussion of Yesharim Darchei Hashem and the whole thing about Lot and all of that, is also in a Gemara in Hodias. So Maharsha over there has an extensive explanation on that he doesn't repeat over here in Nazir. So I'm referring over here to the one in Hodias. That's why you're wondering, you're looking at me like, why am I taking down another volume? That's why. So he points out now like this. Usually when we have with the rule with dots on letters in the Sefer Torah is we say when there's more dotted than undotted letters, then we say that we darshin the dotted letters, and when we have more undotted ones, then we darshin the non-dotted ones. So here we have only one letter in the word that's dotted. So that should mean we leave out that one letter, but we still have the rest of the word. So what does that mean? So Maharsha explains, we darshin it. Even though the dot is on the second vav of a vekuma, we darshin as though it was on the first one. And that means, in other words, as if we take out the letter vav and we're left with the word bikuma when she got up. Meaning, in other words, v'lo yada b'shichva bikuma, that he didn't know when she had gone to sleep with him, that even when he got up the following day and already when they got up the following morning and already the wine had dissipated, he should have realized, at least in some muddled way, realized what happened. And he didn't. So he should have realized at that point something of what happened while they were asleep, and he didn't, and that and then he pretended to not know it, and therefore the following night he didn't care to drink again and to do the same thing all over again. Therefore he can't be called an onus for it. So that's the Gemara says. So wait. So the Gemara hasn't gotten to the point yet that he shouldn't have drunk yet. At this point, the Gemara is saying at least he knew when she woke up next to him. Well, the Gemara asks, so still, my have a little meh, but I'd have a haver. Fine, what good does that do him to know now that last night his daughter slept with him? The fact is done is done. How can he undo it? And the answer is nafka mina. Yeah, but the following night he should have known better not to drink wine. In other words, again, because the pasuk is implying with that dot over the letter that he did know something the next day, even though the pasuk makes it sound like he didn't know at all that she went to sleep with him and that she woke up with him. In fact, the dot teaches us that she did know to some extent that she had woken up next to him. And as Maharsha says, it means that even in some muddled way he realized what happened the night before. Nevertheless, that didn't stop him from drinking again the following night, and for that we can call him a pesheya. For that we can call him a deliberate sinner, and say that he's an example of a foshim yikosh levam, that the ones who deliberately do averus stumble in the ways of Hashem. Where meanwhile his daughters, relative to him, are tzidkonius because they thought that they were doing the right thing. Okay. So going on this topic about Loit and his daughters, Dorash Rava, my dichtiv. What does it mean? A posik in Mishle. Och nifsha mikiryas oiz, a brother who rebels against or from the strong city, umidyonim, and fights kivriach armon, are like a bolt on a castle. So the simple meaning of the pasuk is something like when you have two brothers that fight one against another, then one of them winds up losing and forfeiting a powerful city and then being barred forever from the castle. So in other words, like exactly that. In other words, like you have, let's say, Yaakov and Esau, for example. So we're davening it though about Loit and Avraham. Och nifsha mikiryas oiz, the first half of the pasuk, the brother who rebelled against the strong city, Zeloit Shapirash Avraham. This refers to Loit, who separated himself from Avraham. You have when the whole fight was going on between their shepherds. Now Loit was not Avraham's brother, he's his nephew. But Avraham himself calls him, he says, Ki anoshim achim anochnu, we're men who are brothers. Because we often find that when you talk about close relationships, you skip a generation. The same way as Avraham refers to Sarah in one place as his sister, even though she's his niece. The same way you can refer to Loit as his brother, even though he's his nephew. But then Loit rebelled against that and didn't want to stay with Avraham anymore. Now, of course, they separated from one another, but nevertheless, the point is that it's primarily because Loit wanted to get away from Avraham. Rashi mentions on the pasuk, for example, that when it says Vayisa Loit Mikedem, that Loit traveled from the east. It doesn't mean the geographical east. It means that he stayed, that he wanted to go away from Kadmona Shel Olam, the primordial one of the world, Hashem. He says to himself, I don't need Avraham, and I don't need his God. So he rebelled against Avraham and separated himself from him. Avraham is called Kiryas Oiz, the powerful strong city, in the sense that we find in Psukim that Avraham is compared to a mighty rock. Habitual tzurchut savtem, the Navi says, look at the rock from which you were hewn, from which you were carved out. So we see that Avraham can be compared to a strong rock, like the kind of place where you'd have a strong, impregnable city. So Loit left that, he rebelled against that, and the result is, and with Yonim Kivriach Armon, the result is that there's a fight between them, like the bolt on a castle, meaning Shehitul Midyonim Beni Uveni Yisrael Kivriach Armon. The result of all of this, one thing led to another, because Loit left Avraham, therefore he moved to Sodom, therefore eventually Sodom was destroyed, therefore he ran away from there with his daughters, therefore they wind up this whole thing with his daughters committing znus with him, and the result of that was that there was a permanent rift between him and the Jewish people, like the bolt of a castle, like when the door of a castle is bolted shut, nobody's getting in. The same way, Loit's descendants are not getting into the Jewish people. Shenema lo yovei amoni umayovi b'kal Hashem, as the pasuk says, no amoni umayovi, even when he's megayer, is allowed to enter into the congregation of Hashem, meaning they're never allowed, even they become gerim, they're not allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. And so we're saying that all of that was ultimately, it all traces back to Loit deciding that I don't need Avraham and I don't want to be with him. And the result is that there's a permanent issur against his descendants, joining his male descendants, that is, joining the Jewish people. In fact, by the way, you know, he was saying, and this whole Gemara was saying that his daughters were doing, or at least they thought they were doing the right thing. Maharsho elsewhere points out that this is Taka the reason why. We know, as the Gemara is going to point out over here, you have famously in Torah Shabbat Peh, the men from those nations are not allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people, but the women are. That's why it all goes back to the fact that Lot did it in a rishuistic way, whereas his daughters were doing it in what they thought was the correct way. So the result is the Midyanim Kivriyach Amon. On the surface, in other words, we're talking about that again, that he separated from Avraham and to begin with in Parshas Lech Lecha. The Rif mentions over here another point as well. Even after Sodom was destroyed, what do you have over here? The Malachim tell him, go run off to the mountains. Now, the mountains are where Avraham lived. He lived in Hebron at that point. And Lot says, no, I can't go to the mountains. And instead, he went to Tsoyar. And then, when Tsoyar was destroyed, and he and his daughters went to a cave, then at that point, they thought the whole world was destroyed and everything developed from there. The point is, at least at that point, he should have said, when the Malachim are telling him, go to the mountains, go to Avraham, he should have at least said, you know what? You're right. All this time, for 25 years, I separated myself from Avraham. And now I realize I was wrong in doing that, and let me go make up with him. But he didn't even then, and that's what we're saying over here. The result is that he and his daughters had these children, and created a permanent rift between them. So similarly, Dorash Rava, V'itamer Rabbi Yitzchak, Rava, or some say Rabbi Yitzchak, Darshan, another pasuk from the say. It's actually not far from the other pasuk in Mishlei. Both of them are in Perek Yud Ches of Mishlei. Okay, the Perokim, as we have them, were invented by the Goyim, but nevertheless, these psukim, the Och Nifshem Kiryas Oiz that we just quoted, and this next pasuk, the Savan of Yuakish Nifra, are not that far apart. So here also, so my dichtiv, what does the pasuk mean? L'savo yivakash nifrad, the one who separates himself is looking for taiva. B'chol tushia yisgala. In every tushia, every place where they're having good advice, wise counsel, yisgala, he will be exposed. So again, the simple pasuk, it means, in other words, like that. You have a person, a Baal Averis, and then people find out what he's doing, and he wants to separate himself and go off and do his own thing and follow his own taivas, and eventually they find out, and he's publicly shamed among everybody who thinks about it. So again, this refers specifically to Lot. L'sava yivakash nifrad ze Lot. He separated himself from Avraham for the sake of taiva, because like the Gemara said before, that when you have the pasuk that says that he looked over the whole valley of the Yarden and he saw that it's well-watered, etc., was all the Gemara had explained it phrase by phrase to mean how he sees the znus and the averus that are going on there in Sodom, and he wants to be part of it, so he separated himself from Avraham for the purpose of being able to follow his tivus. And the result is, behold, Tushia Yisgala, when it says in every Tushia, the Gemara often mentions in a few places that Tushia is a nickname for the Torah. So, B'chol Toshiyah, in every place where they learn Torah, Yisgala, he is revealed. That is, shame is constantly being brought up. Shenisgala kloine bebotik nesiyas ubebotim adrashas. His shame of what he did with his daughters is being exposed and publicly read about in the shuls and the bote medrash. D'tnan. As we learn, we have in the Psukim, you have in Torah Shemachsav, and even in Torah Shabbat Peh, D'tnan, Amorim Yisurin Isur Olam, where we have in Mishnayos, where it says that Amorim Yisurin Isur to intermarry into the Jewish people forever, even generation after generation. So the Mefarish explains over here, in other words, that when we say B'chol Tushia means in both aspects of the Torah. The Torah has Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh. And in both of them, you find mention of, in both of them, you find mention of Lot's shame. The Maharsho, and again, Maharsho in the parallel Gemara and Hodias explains a little differently that it just means, in other words, that it means, in other words, his shame is being exposed, but not so much that of his daughters. Because again, that Mishnah, which is saying that the Amonim and Me'ovim are also, is referring to the males, not to the females. Why? Based on this point, because he was the Rasha and they were not. So therefore, every time that we mention this point, then we're mentioning the shame of Lot, what he did, how he was a Baal Taiva, and what became of him, versus his daughters, where we're saying that they were much better than he was, and that therefore the result of that is that their female descendants are allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. By the way, the Gemara in Yevamos actually, when it discusses this point, gives other reasons why the men are also and the women are mutter. Basically, the Gemara says over there, since the Pasuk says that they're also because they didn't greet you with bread and water when you were passing by their countries, and because they hired Bilam to curse you, so there, the Gemara explains women weren't involved in any of those things. The women are not expected. It's not sneistic for them to go out and offer food to travelers, and they weren't involved in the whole deal to hire Bilam. So, but it means, in other words, that both things factor into it. There's both that, but there's that, but there's also the fact that ultimately it's because their ancestresses were Sidkonius relative to their father. In this connection, by the way, actually, there's an interesting thing. A Medrash says on it that there's an expression in a Medrash, Eitz Yosef brings, there's not a single Shabbos where they don't read about Loit in Shul, where they don't mention publicly about the shame of Loit. Now, what does that mean? We don't read Parshas, the stories in Parshas Vayera. We don't read it every Shabbos in Shul. Eitz Yosef brings one possibility is he brings from one of the Mefarshim on the he brings from one of the Mefarshim on the Medrash over there that they used to have a minhag every Shabbos they would read this section of the Torah in Shul. Aside from the Parshas Shavuah, they would also read the section of Loit. Why? Because on Shabbos, more than the rest of the week, you drink. You know, you have on Shabbos, you make Kiddush, and then in those times, they drank a lot more wine than we do. So, therefore, there's a real concern every Shabbos that people might get drunk. So, therefore, they would make a public reading of the story of Loit in order to remember, in order to remind everybody, don't get too drunk. You never know what could happen from that. In later times, when people stopped drinking and people stopped having such a degree of simcha on Shabbos, then they didn't need it anymore. With that said, though, he brings a different girsa in that medrash. That's not b'chol Shabbos v'Shabbos, but b'chol Shana v'Shana. There's not a single year, in which case, yeah, every year we have Parshas Vayera, and every year we read it. In any case, the point is that we're saying over here in the Gemara that that every time that his shame, his humiliation of what happened over here with his daughters is constantly being brought up again and again, and all of it traces back to the fact that he wanted to follow his taivas, and because of that, he separated from Avraham. So the Gemara continues, Omar Ola, here's a contrast for you. Tomer Zinsa, so here we're talking about the daughters of Loit, which they committed Znus, but they thought there was a good reason. Here's a different example of other women in Jewish history who committed Znus for good reasons or not for good reasons. Tomer Zinsa, Zimri Zina. Both Tomer, Yehuda's daughter-in-law, and Zimri both committed Znus. Very much Hashgacha Pratis, actually, this whole story of Zimri and Cosby actually came up in today's Daf HaYomi as well. It was discussed extensively in connection with the din that if a Yid has relations with a Goyte, then a Kanoi like Pinchas can kill him. So there was quite a bit of discussion about it in today's Daf HaYomi. Anyway, so here you look at the contrast between Tomer and Zimri. Tomer committed Znus. The fact is Yehuda was involved as well. However, Marashah there in Hodias points out that Rambam tells us at the beginning of Hilchos Issus that before Matan Torah, what Yehuda was doing over there was actually nothing wrong with it. It was perfectly permissible before Matan Torah for a man to meet a woman by the side of the street, decide they want to have relations, go into a private place, have relations, and then they each go their way. Before Matan Torah, that was fine. After Matan Torah, such a thing is also. So therefore, in that sense, you can't really say that Yehuda committed Znus. But as far as Tomer, she dressed up like a zoina. She made it look like it's a thing of znus. In addition, that Ramban on the Psukim discusses over there that to a certain extent she was considered like a Shemeres Yavam, because after all, her previous husbands had died, and she's supposed to be waiting until Yehuda decides that that Shelah, his third son, is old enough to marry her. Meanwhile, okay, Yehuda was putting her off, which is why she went ahead with her plan, what she did. But nevertheless, we can still say, in a certain sense, she committed Znus relative to what she should have done. And on the other hand, you have Zimri with Cosby, where he was Mezana with her. Now they were blaming Zimri because they were blaming Zimri because it's already after Matan Torah, and therefore he has a responsibility not to have relations with a goyta. And also, of course, there's the fact he being a yid, he has a mitzvah not to do this. Whereas Cosby does not really have the same mitzvah, she being a goyish girl. Anyway, but look at the contrast. Tomer zinsa yotzim mena malachim neviim. Tomer committed znus, but nevertheless she did it l'shem shemayim, and the result was that kings and neviim were descended from her. Kings, because we have the whole Malchus based David, ultimately descends from her. And Nevi'im, the Gemara points out elsewhere, that one of the kings of Yehuda was named Amatsia, and he had a brother named Amoz. This Amoz was the father of Yeshaya, and both Amoz and Yeshaya were Nevi'im. So we see that there were at least two Nevi'im who descend from Tamar and Yehuda. In fact, there may have been more, but at least we know of these two for sure. So therefore, so we see that despite the fact that Tamar did it in the seemingly improper way, nevertheless, she did it l'shem shemayim, and look at the good results that it brought about. On the other hand, Zimri committed Znus, Naflu all of Kamla Revavos Mi'Yisrael, and several tens of thousands of Jews, 24,000 Jews, were killed because of him, because he wasn't doing it Lishma. Now, there is, by the way, a very interesting point that's brought in various Sfarim that actually, with Zimri and Cosby also, there was a certain intention over there. To do we know that sometimes to refine the world and bring out sparks of Kedusha, sometimes there are things that have to be done in these odd, seemingly inappropriate ways. We have the example of Yehuda and Tamar. Later on, you have the example of David and Bathsheba. You have a number of examples of that in Jewish history, where you have something that seemingly is wrong, but nevertheless, a tzaddik decides it's the right thing to do, and there come out good results from it. So it's brought in various places that Zimri had the same intention with Cosby. He was figuring, sort of like whether you have a Yefas Toyar, a Jewish soldier captures a Yefas Toyar in battle and makes her his wife. Sometimes you have the Or HaChaim HaKadosh has at the beginning of Parshas Ki Tsetse a long explanation about the deeper dynamics behind what's going on over here, that he recognizes sparks of Kedusha in her that have to do with his neshama. The problem was that Zimri was doing it not 100% L'shem Shemayim. Again, that Gemara in Sanhedrin, that was today's Daf HaYomi, discusses how he confronts Moshe in a very chutzpahdik way about it. So even if there, so even to the extent that there was any good intention over there, it was covered over by his selfish reasons and his taivadik reasons to do it. And the result is, as the Gemara is saying over here, that it caused a disaster. It's even brought, by the way, actually, that later on, and we learned not so long ago in Nedarim, we talked about the six sources of Rabbi Akiva's wealth, and one of them was, we said, the wife of Turnus Rufus. We have the whole story over there where Turnus Rufus's wife tries to seduce Rabbi Akiva, doesn't get anywhere with him, and eventually, after her husband dies or divorces her, she marries Rabbi Akiva and brings him tremendous wealth. It's brought that actually she and Rabbi Akiva are Gilgulim of Zimri and Cosby. So what happened was Zimri had tried to do, had tried to accomplish this with Cosby and failed and took down 24,000 Jews with him. Now, in a later generation, you have Rabbi Akiva, who had 24,000 Talmidim corresponding to those 24,000. He and Cosby's Gilgal, which is Turnus Rufus's wife, are able to accomplish the thing the right way and bring it into Kedusha the way it's supposed to be. But here, the Gemara is pointing out that Zimri himself did it with the wrong intentions, or at least with some degree of wrong intentions, and the result was that it caused a catastrophe. There is, by the way, a very interesting idea. Here now, the Gemara is going to bring this concept of Aveira Lishma. You have this rarity where a person does something which is ostensibly an Aveira, but he does it Lishma. He does it purely Lishem Shemayim, and the Gemara is going to talk about the greatness of it. But there's actually an interesting point brought in that connection. Aside from the fact that anyway, nowadays, who has the ability to say that they're doing an Aveira Lishma? You have to follow the Torah, and that's that. But in addition, you also have, even when a person is doing an Aveira Lishma, Taka, he has to make sure, as the Gemara is going to work out over here, that he has to be 100% L'shem Shemayim without even a trace of anything else. And an example of that, you find like this. You find the Navi Hosea criticizes the descendants of Yehu. During his times, the rulers, the kings of the Aseret HaShevatim, were descended from Yehu. About 100 years earlier, Yehu had overthrown the dynasty of Ahav and wiped them all out and became the new king. He was actually anointed for that purpose by a Navi, and the Navi told him to do that job of wipe out the whole family of Ahav and get rid of all the Avodah Zarah that they introduced into Eretz Yisrael. Yet later on, the Navi Hosea says that pretty soon Hashem says, I'm going to punish that family of Yehu, and I'm going to bring against them the guilt for the blood that they shed in the city of Yisrael when they were doing this. Now, what do you mean? Why should they be held guilty for that? Hashem sent Yehu to do exactly that job. And the answer is basically because since they kept some of the Avodah Zarah that was in Eretz Yisrael at that time, they kept the Eglei HaZahav from the original Yeravam. Therefore, Hashem says, you know what? You were doing something by my command, but you were not doing it completely the Shem Shemayim, because if you were, you would have gotten rid of the Eglei HaZahav. And therefore, after all, we can judge it. Therefore, Hashem says, after all, I can judge it as plain old murder, and therefore you're responsible for it, and eventually Hashem is going to get back at you for it. So we see, in other words, that here they're doing something which is an Aveira. It was supposed supposed to be lishma, and because it wasn't 100% lishma, then the Eibishter says, you know what? Forget about your good intentions and all that. We're only going to factor in the fact that it was plain old murder. So b'chlal, you have that concept. In other words, a person does something which there's something which is not really the glatt thing to do. They have to make sure they're doing it 100% l'shem shamayim or else. So the Gemara says, Amar of Nachmi Yitzchok, G'doyla aveira l'shma mi mitzvah shaloi l'shma. Doing an aveira l'shma, as the Gemara is going to give it, like we had these examples of znus, and like the Gemara is going to bring an example over here, is greater than doing a mitzvah shaloi l'shma. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean, Eini? You're telling me that doing a mitzvah shaloi l'shma is not that great a thing? V'ha Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, lo'olam yasek odin b'torah v'mitzvah, safilu shaloi l'shma. A person should always involve himself in doing Torah and mitzvahs, even if he's acting not l'shma. Shemitoch shaloi l'shma, bo l'shma. From doing shaloi l'shma, he'll eventually come to l'shma. Or you have the explanation of Siddur, that means within the shaloi l'shma, there's hiding out there a reason l'shma. Yid wants to do, deep down, wants to do what the Eibishter wants, and therefore, even if on the face of it, he's doing shaloi l'shma, but in reality, the real motivation behind him doing that mitzvah really is l'shma, after all. So therefore, so why are you saying that? Aveir shaloi l'shma is greater than that. Now, here and in a number of places in Shas, Tosfos points out that we have other Gemaras that say that when a person learns Torah not for the right reasons, then it's a very bad thing. So how does that fit with over here? We're saying that Shaloi Lashma is fine, and eventually he'll graduate to Lashma. So Tosfos, in many places, points out there's a difference between different types of Shaloi Lashma. There can be a person learns Torah Shaloi Lashma, meaning because he wants to be famous. He wants people to honor him as a Talmud Chacham or something like that. It's not a great thing, but nevertheless, it's not so bad either. From doing that, eventually he'll come to learning Lashma. As opposed to, you have the kind of person who learns Torah to use as a weapon against others, Lakanter, Tosfos calls it. So that can mean, for example, there's a lot of possibilities. You can be using it, you can be learning the Torah in order to Dafka now be able to look down on others and make fun of them and call them names and things like that. There can be that he's using the knowledge of Torah that he has in order to use it to cheat people and things like that, to use loopholes, api alocha, that now he'll know about that they won't. He can do it, for example, he can be using his learning Torah in order dafka to disturb other people from other mitzvahs they're supposed to be doing, whatever. All those kinds of cases, those are the kind of things the Gemara says. The Gemara is saying that's no good for him to do that. But over here, we're talking about the middle kind of lishma, which is he's not doing it to be close with the Eibishter, but he's doing it because he wants to be famous and be honored and whatever. It's not the best thing, but it's not so bad either. So how can we say that an aveda lishma is greater than that? Incidentally, in that connection, it's interesting, the Rambam, when he brings this concept, mentions it only as far as learning Torah. He doesn't mention as far as mitzvahs. The Alter Rebbe points out in Kuntres Acharon, in Hilchos Talmud Torah, in Kuntres Acharon, he points out because when it comes to mitzvahs, it may not matter the motivation so much anyway. The mitzvah has been accomplished no matter what. When it comes to learning Torah, then you have the person's motivation is more important because then there's no maisa over there. There's only the action of learning Torah, and then it's more important that he's doing it for proper motivations rather than, like Tosfos is saying, for these reasons to attack others or whatever. But with mitzvahs, there's less of an issue with that. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Ela Ema. So you're right, rather, you have to correct the statement of Rav Nachman Yitzchok, Kim mitzvah shaloi l'shma. Doing an aveira l'shma is as great and as significant as a mitzvah shaloi l'shma. So where do we see that? From Dichtiv. So we have the story of Yoel and Sisera. So we have the story in Sefer Shoftim. Sisera is fighting against the Jewish people. He's defeated in battle. He runs away to the tent of Yoel, who at that point, the Pasuk says there was a peace treaty between her family and Sisera, so Sisera figures he's going to be safe in her tent. She comes in there, as the Gemara is going to explain now, that she seduced him into being Mizana with her. She's a married woman. Her husband is Chever Akeni, and she seduces him. That's an Aveira. But it was Lashma in order to save the whole Jewish people. And as the Gemara is going to explain, that she had tremendous schus for that. So then she tired him out with bia, and then once he's asleep, then she took a tent peg and knocked it into his skull and killed him, and that way saved the whole Jewish people. And the Pasuk says, Tevorach minoshim, may she be blessed more than the women. Yoel, Eishes Chever Akeni, Yoel, the wife of Chever Akeni, Minoshim Ba'oihol Tevorach, may she be blessed more than, or with the bracha, or from the bracha of, the women in the tent. Now, man inu noshim ba'ohel, who are the women in the tent? That refers to Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah. Each of them is described in various psukim involved as in connection with a tent. By Sarah, you have the Malachim ask, "Where's Sarah?" And Avraham says, "Hine ba'ohel." By Rivka, you have that Yitzchak brought her ha'ohel Sarah imoy. And by Rachel and Leah, you have that when Lavan is searching for his teraphim, he left the ohel of Leah and came to the ohel of Rachel. So we see that each of the imos is described with the term ohel. So now the Devota is saying about her that she deserves a bracha like theirs, minoshim, a bracha of a semblance of their bracha, or even minoshim can mean from the women, mean that she gets a greater bracha than them. So in other words, what we're saying is, because now what she did was an avera lishma. What was the avera? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, sheva be'ilas baal oisei rosha ba'oisei shah. That rosha, her sister, had relations with her seven times before he finally was tired out, and then she was able to get him to sleep and kill him. Shenema, because in Devorah's Shira over there, she describes Bein Ragleha Koran Nofal Shochav Gomer, between her feet, which is a euphemism for having relations, he bent down, he fell, he lay down, and so there's seven expressions in the Pasuk and can use Basher, Basher Korah Shom Nofal. So there's seven expressions over there of crouching and laying down, which the Gemara's understanding, each of those refers to another act of Bia. So therefore, so here we're saying she's a married Jewish woman. So this goy is off limits to her anyway. And yet, Devorah is praising her and says that she deserves greater praise and a greater schar even than the imos. So we see that an avera, we see therefore that an avera lishma is greater than a mitzvah shaloi lishma. Now, in what way is the imahos considered a mitzvah shaloi lishma? Besides in Hodias, another place where this particular piece of Gemara comes up is in Yevamos as well. And Tosfos mentions the point because, after all, yes, the imahos were accomplishing a tremendous thing whenever they had relations with their husbands, with the avos. They're doing it in order to have children that are going to be the future of the Jewish people. But they had hana from it. After all, as much as they're doing it l'shem mitzvah for pruvu and to have children who are going to establish the whole Jewish people, they also had hana from it. Whereas the Gemara is going to point out over here that Yoel did not have hana from Sisera. So in that sense, therefore, her avera is great. Her avera, which is with the shema, was completely the shema without a trace of self-interest in it, as opposed to the imos. As much as there was a mitzvah, there was a certain hana in it as well. Maharsho says, by the way, that's why we're also talking about. That's why we mentioned them in connection with the word ohel. That, in other words, ohel represents tznius. So they're doing it. They're having relations with their husbands, the avos, in a very tzniistic way. But nevertheless, again, they had this hana. So therefore, it can be called a mitzvah shaloi lishma. Rashi elsewhere explains that another possibility can mean the fact that the imahos had their husbands take a pilegish in addition to them. Like we have Sarah took Hagar and gave her to Avraham, and Rachel and Leah did the same with Bilhah and Zilpah. But Maharsha points out over there that doesn't really work. That doesn't really work with the comparison over here, because here you're talking about your. In other words, the idea would be they're doing a mitzvah shaloi lishma because they're it's a mitzvah that they're giving their husband another wife in order that he should be able to be mekayim pruvu. But Maharsha says, I mean, the fact is that doesn't really fit with over here with Yoel, where we're talking about something involving her herself. Well, the Gemara asks, delay. After all, isn't Yoel also having Hana from the Bia with Sisera? So in that case, how can we call it an Avera Lishma? And the answer is she didn't. The good, what the Rishoyim do and they think is doing good, is actually the Tzaddikim consider it bad. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Hashem tells Lavan, "He shamalacham midabrim Yaakov mitov adra." Be careful that you don't speak to Yaakov good or evil. This is when he's about to confront him over the whole matter of the teraphim and why he ran away and all. Now, what's the problem? That if Lavan speaks badly to Yaakov, of course that would be a problem if he threatens him or whatever. But even if he speaks nicely to him, the problem is he's going to eventually mention and swear in the name of his getchke. And the result is that Yaakov is going to then be over on the mitzvah. The Torah says, "Lo yishama al picha." It shouldn't be that because of you, a goy swears by the name of his getchke. So now, and in fact, that happened because in the whole conversation over there, in the end, they make a peace treaty, and you have over there the Kei Avraham, the Kei Nocher, Yishpatu Beinenu, that the Lavan suggests that the God of Avraham, which is Hashem, and Lahavdil, the God of Nocher, should judge between us. So therefore, Hashem had warned Lavan ahead of time, what you think is good, Yaakov is not going to consider good. The same way over here, in other words, what Sisera might consider good, that he's giving her Hana, is in fact considered bad for the Tzaddik or for the Tzaddikus. She would have no Hana from it. So that's the point. He's shown so Shapir. It's easy to understand why, if he says anything bad, then it would be bad for Yaakov. Why not good? You see that what the Rosh Lavan would consider to be good, Yaakov would be considered bad. Would consider bad. What was it over here? So the Gemara here doesn't spell it out. But Rashi brings it, and also in the parallel Gemaras, that he put in her a zuhama, a ruchniyus of filth. So you have the expression the Gemara mentions in some places that when you by the chet eitz hadas, the nachash put a ruchniyus of filth into Chava, and that remained with all of humanity until Matan Torah, until we came to Har Sinai, and then Hashem removed that zuhama from us. So the result is, therefore, Sisera being a goy, he still has that zuhama. Yael being a Jewish woman does not. So therefore, so now when he has relations with her, even though she seduced him in the first place in order to weaken him, but why did she not have any hana from it? Because it meant that now this ruchniyus of filth is being put into her, and she didn't want any part of that, she being a tzaddikus. So therefore, that's why we can say that she didn't have any actual physical hana from it. So we can call it a, we can call it a complete Aveira Lishma. There was no trace of any self-interest in that Aveira that she did. By the way, I mean, there is on Bechlal, you have the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin when it talks about the whole concept of Yehoreg Val Yaver, that when it comes to Gilui Arayis, women are not so have a different status than men in that, because generally women are the passive one in that, Kauka Olam, as the Gemara explains it in connection with Esther. But here, since she herself is the one who invited him in and so forth, then you can't say Kauka Olam, and therefore you need this answer over here that she had no Hana from it, and that she's doing it in order to save the entire Jewish people. There is, in that connection, an interesting tshuva from the Noda B'Yehuda. There was a situation that a group of travelers were being attacked by bandits, and one woman offers herself to the bandit chief to have relations with him in order to save the rest of the group. And the question is, afterwards, is she also to her husband? Because after all, she did it in order to save their lives. So the Noda B'Yehuda discusses that, and one thing is, he brings in, among others, this Gemara over here. But there's this distinction, because here she was doing it to save the whole Jewish people, whereas there it's to save the entire caravan. It's fine. You can, to a certain extent, you could say she was doing it as a matter of mesiras nefesh, but does that mean she remains mutter to her husband? Is not so simple. By the way, it's brought in Sifrei Kabbalah that in the end, from this relation that Sisera had with Yoel, they had descendants from that. The Gemara says elsewhere that Rabbi Akiva was descended from Sisera. His father Yosef was a ger, and then from that comes Rabbi Akiva. It's brought, I think, that Amami Fano brings that resulted from this. We're not talking about Sisera and his wife. We're talking about here Sisera and Yoel. Hundreds of years later, from that came Rabbi Akiva. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Geula Tes Adar Aleph. So La'asid Lavoi, we have the expression in the pasuk that then in the future in Yemos Mashiach all the nations will have Sofa Brura, a clear language, and they'll all call together in Hashem's name and serve Hashem in unison. And the Mefoshim on the pasuk explain that Sofa Brura means Loshen HaKodesh. So what does that mean? In other words, that at that point, all of them will know Lashon HaKodesh. So that means, in other words, like this, we have to begin with. They made the Tower of Bavel, and they made the Tower of Bavel out of bricks. There's a mimer of the Alter Rebbe that talks about Lashon HaKodesh. The letters of Lashon HaKodesh are compared to stones, which are a naturally created thing, as opposed to the letters of other Goyish languages are compared to bricks that are man-made. La'asid Lavi, we won't need that. So La'asid Lavi, everything will be Lashon HaKodesh, like stones that are naturally made by Hashem, rather than things that are made by human agency. Continuing on halachas of Erev Chatzeres, so one way of doing it is that you make an Erev Chatzeres every Erev Shabbos, and then you use the challah or the matzah for it on Shabbos itself. Because there's the idea that once you've used it for one mitzvah, you should use it for another mitzvah. But if there's the concern now that, and that's not a problem because the Eruv food does not have to be intact throughout all of Shabbos, as long as it was intact, Bein HaShemoshes, as long as it was intact when Shabbos began, then you're good even if it gets lost or eaten or whatever later. However, there is the concern that you might forget one Shabbos and then you're going to have big problems as far as carrying. So instead you use one loaf or one matzah or one box of matzah or whatever for the entire year, for all the Shabbosim until Pesach. And then that's why you have the Nusach and the Siddur, the whole Shabbos is Hashanah for all the Shabbosim in the year. Ben b'Shabbosu, ben b'Shar Shabbos is Hashanah. You do have to make sure that it doesn't spoil during that time. As far as Shabbos during Pesach, then fine, you use kosher and matzah for this purpose. So the Alter Rebbe, in fact, phrases it in the Siddur that the minhag in the Ashkenazic minhag and the Ashkenazic minhag is in fact you do that. Erev Pesach, you use matzah, which lasts long term. That way, first of all, since it's matzah, you can have it over Pesach, and then in addition, since it keeps long term, you can keep it for the rest of the year, and that way you have one Eruv for the entire year. And like I mentioned the other day, then what you do is the following Pesach, you replace it with new matzah, and then use that old matzah sometime during Pesach, sometime for your Sedarim or for one of the other meals during Pesach.